Becatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Becatra AI. Welcome, everyone. Today, we're diving deep into a truly essential book for understanding the modern Middle East. That's Thomas L. Friedman's From Beirut to Jerusalem.
Absolutely essential. And our mission today, well, it feels pretty critical, doesn't it? We're not just revisiting history here. We're really trying to uncover the foundational ideas, the things that explain why the region and, frankly, global affairs connected to it often feel so stuck.
Stuck is a good word. We want to get past the sort of daily news cycle, the headlines, and look at what Friedman called the source code of the conflict.
Exactly. That source code idea is key. Friedman argues pretty compellingly, I think, that we often focus on the hardware, you know, land, borders, resources.
Very tangible stuff.
Yeah. But he says the real conflict, the deeper struggle, is over the software. The dreams, the fears, the collective memories, the narratives people live by.
And if you don't get the software, well, the hardware negotiations, they're just doomed to fail, aren't they?
That's his point. The book really challenges this maybe Western notion that these are just political disputes you can solve with a handshake and a map. Our goal, really, is to give you the tool, the kind of intellectual framework, to see the region less as just lines on a map and more as this incredibly complex web of competing psychologies, competing stories.
And who better to guide us than Friedman himself? I mean, a three-time Pulitzer winner for the New York Times. But crucially, his perspective isn't academic, is it?
No, not at all. It's forged in experience. He was right there, boots on the ground for, what, over a decade?
Yeah, deep immersion. Think about the timing. He was the Beirut bureau chief, 82 to 84, right in the thick of the Lebanese Civil War, the Israeli invasion.
Right.
Just chaos.
Unbelievable chaos. And then he pivots, moves to Jerusalem, 84 to 88. Just in time for the first intifada to erupt, he saw it all unfold.
And what I find so compelling is that he didn't just, you know, drop in for interviews. He learned Arabic. He immersed himself. That gives his writing such a visceral quality. You feel the texture of the place.
Totally. And there's another layer, too. His American Jewish background. It gave him, perhaps, a kind of critical distance, but also, importantly, specific access, especially within Israeli society.
So he could bridge these worlds.
In a unique way, yes. He could translate between the Western mindset and the Middle Eastern realities he was witnessing. The book feels less like a standard report and more like, well, like his education. A very intense, sometimes brutal education in how the region really works.
Okay, let's unpack the core argument then, because it really does force you to reset your assumptions, especially if you're coming from a Western perspective.
It does. Friedman basically says, look, forget applying modern rational political models as the primary lens. You have to accept that the real rules of the game are ancient. They're rooted in these deep loyalties, tribe, sect, historical memory, grievances.
And these loyalties often just override everything else, like national identity or political institutions.
Constantly. They run deeper. It's a challenging idea, I think, for anyone raised on Enlightenment ideals of the rational state.
Yeah.
So the book is kind of an analysis, but it's written for us, for the outsiders who keep asking, why doesn't diplomacy work? Why does it all seem so irrational? Friedman's answer is, it's not irrational if you understand the underlying loyalties. Loyalty isn't primarily to the flag. It's to the family, the clan, the sect.
And he structures the book as a journey, right? Through these two cities that become symbols.
Exactly. A geographic journey, but also an intellectual one. Part one is Beirut.
Beirut. Symbolizing the broader Arab world struggles, modernity, sectarianism, outside meddling. He calls it a political laboratory, a chaotic one, the hot war.
That's it. Total chaos. Then he moves to Jerusalem, and that represents something different. The intense, deeply entrenched, two-sided conflict, the Israeli-Palestinian struggle.
The Cold War, he calls it, moving from open anarchy to this simmering psychological tension, deep nationalisms clashing.
Right. Let's dig into Beirut first. You mentioned the hot war aspect. Friedman's description of Lebanon, it wasn't really a functioning nation, was it? It was more like...
He called it tribes with flags. That phrase is so evocative.
It perfectly captures it. You had all these groups, Maronites, Sunnis, Shia, Druze, Palestinians, all vying for power. But allegiance was purely local, sectarian, not national.
So when the central government inevitably collapsed, there was nothing holding it together.
Nothing, because the loyalty was never truly invested in the state itself. It was always always tribal first.
And that kind of environment, that tribal fragmentation, it just became fertile ground for disaster, especially when outside powers got involved.
Oh, absolutely. Friedman gives this searing account of the 1982 Israeli invasion Operation Peace for Galilee, led by Ariel Sharon, and then the ill-fated American peacekeeping mission that followed.
Ill-fated is putting it mildly. Their failure seems like a central lesson.
It really is.
Mm-hmm.
The foreign powers, especially the Americans, they came in thinking they could impose order, you know, with military might, but they completely misread the situation. They didn't understand the decentralized, deeply personal, tribal nature of the fighting.
And the 1983 Marine barracks bombing, just horrific.
Yeah.
A devastating proof point that the outsiders just didn't get the local stakes.
Didn't get the software at all.
Yeah.
Which brings us to maybe the most chilling concept from the Beirut section, something Friedman argues defines the whole region's political logic. Hama rules.
Okay, explain Hama rules. This sounds important.
It's absolutely crucial. It's named after the Syrian city of Hama. In 1982, President Hafez al-Assad faced an uprising there by the Muslim Brotherhood. His response.
What did he do?
He leveled the city. Just flattened entire neighborhoods. Killed tens of thousands of his own citizens. Utterly brutal, but effective in crushing dissent.
Good grief. And the lesson from that?
The lesson, absorbed across the region, was this. Politics is zero sum. It's rule or be ruled, eat or be eaten. There's no middle ground. Compromise. That's seen as weakness, potentially fatal weakness.
Oh, so defeat isn't just losing an election. It means potential annihilation.
Exactly. Which means you fight to the bitter end with total commitment because the stakes are existential. Friedman argues this logic permeated the Lebanese Civil War and influences political thinking throughout the Middle East, even today. It's a terrifyingly pragmatic kind of brutality.
That idea of total unforgiving power, it's such a stark contrast when he shifts focus, moving from the raw chaos of Beirut to Jerusalem, trading that hot war for the psychological Cold War.
Yeah, it's a real shift in tone and focus. In Jerusalem, the battlefield moves inward. The most significant barriers, Friedman says, aren't the physical walls, the checkpoints. They're psychological. Calls them the invisible walls of memory, fear, and mutual denial.
Invisible walls. Let's explore the two sides of that wall. First, the Israeli psyche. What shapes that?
Overwhelmingly, it's the trauma of the Holocaust. That's the bedrock. It creates this intense never-again mentality where security isn't just policy. It's existential. It's everything. The core operating system, as you put it earlier.
Pretty much. But Friedman's also careful to show it's not monolithic. He points out the internal fractures within Israeli society.
Mm.
You know, the growing tensions between secular and ultra-Orthodox Jews, the historical divides between Ashkenazi and Sephardi communities. It's complex internally, too.
And on the other side of that invisible wall, the Palestinian psyche.
Defined primarily by the Nakba, the catastrophe of 1948. The experience of dispossession, of losing their homeland, and the ongoing struggle for statehood. That's their foundational trauma.
And he's quite critical of the Palestinian leadership at the time, isn't he? Particularly Yasser Arafat and the PLO.
He is. He portrays Arafat as this master political survivor, a powerful symbol for his people, absolutely. But he also suggests Arafat struggled, really struggled, to make the leap from revolutionary icon to pragmatic statesman.
Meaning, he often seemed to prioritize the grand gesture, the all-or-nothing symbolism, over smaller, incremental political gains that might have actually improved lives or moved things forward. It was about the narrative as much as the reality.
And this clash of psychologies, these invisible walls, the leadership issues, it all just builds until it explodes, right?
Yeah.
In 1987, with the first Intifada.
Exactly. And the Intifada was different. It wasn't orchestrated from Tunis by the PLO leadership.
Yeah.
It was grassroots. Spontaneous, just kids, basically, throwing stones at soldiers occupying their towns.
A declaration of self-reliance, almost.
That's how Friedman portrays it. It came from the bottom up. And it was transformative because it forced Israelis, maybe for the first time collectively, to confront the real costs, moral, military, demographic of the ongoing occupation. It made the status quo visibly unsustainable.
Okay, so taking this whole journey from Beirut's chaos to Jerusalem's simmering tension, if we zoom out, what are the big overarching themes, the core lessons Friedman wants us to take away?
Well, the first one we've touched on a lot, but it bears repeating. Theme one, tribal identity trumps political rationality. It's just the fundamental rule. Loyalty to the immediate group, family, clan, sect, consistently shapes behavior more powerfully than loyalty to the modern nation state. And that's just fundamentally different from how Western democracies are supposed to work.
And theme two, this one feels incredibly tragic, the competing psychologies of victimhood.
Yeah. His line is unforgettable. Both Israelis and Palestinians have PhDs in suffering. Each side has this deep, powerful narrative of its own victimhood, which is absolutely central to its identity.
But it's protective, right? It makes it almost impossible to see the other side's perspective or even to engage in self-critique.
Exactly. It becomes a shield. And it justifies actions based on past trauma. It's this vicious cycle, a closed loop of pain and justification.
Which leads directly into theme three, the overwhelming power of the past.
Mm-hmm. Because these conflicts are so rooted in historical narratives and traumas, history isn't just history. It's not in the past. As Friedman says, it's lived every day.
So every negotiation, every political move is filtered through generations of grievance, makes finding forward-looking solutions incredibly hard.
Almost impossible sometimes, it feels. And that brings us to theme four, the failure of external intervention. This is a tough lesson, especially for, say, American foreign policy.
Because outsiders just keep getting it wrong.
And time again, they impose their own logic, their own frameworks, completely misunderstanding the local dynamics, the software. Friedman's conclusion is stark. Sustainable solutions, if they're ever to come, have to emerge from within the region. They can't be parachuted in from Washington or Geneva.
He really does have a way with words, doesn't he? Taking these huge, complex ideas and crystallizing them. Let's talk about some specific quotes or lines that really stand out.
Yeah, the book is full of them. They stick with you.
I think the one that perfectly captures that tribal loyalty in Beirut is, "In the Middle East, you don't die for your country. You die for your neighborhood." Instantly clarifies the motivation, right?
Absolutely. It's not abstract nationalism. It's concrete defense of your immediate community. And related to Hama rules, that zero-sum logic, he just states it bluntly, compromise is an alien concept. Chilling, but it explains so much of the brutality.
No room for gray. And then back in Jerusalem, that quote about the walls. "The real walls are the invisible walls of memory, fear, and mutual denial." That hits deep. It tells you the core problem isn't physical, it's psychological.
It really is. And maybe the most important one for all of us, just trying to understand the news day to day. The Middle East is a place where people don't just remember their history. They live it every day.
Yeah, that's key. Reading a headline today, you have to assume 1948, 1967, maybe even centuries earlier. It's all still actively shaping the present. It's not just background.
It's the operating system.
So, okay, this is fascinating analysis, but how do we actually use this? How can listeners apply these insights? We're not all diplomats.
No, but we can be more informed, more empathetic citizens. On a personal level, I think the big takeaway is about cultural understanding. Before you jump to judge or try to fix a situation, whether it's global politics or, frankly, a disagreement in your own community, try to understand the other side's software. Suspend judgment. Seek to understand their narrative, their fears, their history first.
That's applicable anywhere, really, and professionally, or thinking about policy.
The big lesson is humility. Avoid what Friedman implicitly critiques, the arrogance of imposing outside solutions, whether you're in business development, aid work, whatever. Accessible engagement means working with existing social realities, not trying to bulldoze them and replace them with some idealized Western model. You have to respect the local context.
And finally, just as news consumers, how can this help us be more critical readers or viewers?
Use it as a lens. When you encounter news about the region, a negotiation, a conflict, a political statement, ask yourself those Friedman-esque questions. Is this being driven by historical grievance? Is this Hama rules logic at play? Whose story, whose invisible wall isn't being told in this report? It helps you see beyond the surface.
For me, I think the most powerful, maybe surprising realization from revisiting this book is just how clear it makes it that the hardest wars, the truly intractable conflicts, they're not really about land or resources in the end. They're fought over identity, over memory, over competing stories about who belongs and who suffered most.
That's so true. You can redraw borders on a map, but you can't just erase that deep psychological software, those lived histories.
It makes peace seem incredibly difficult, but also highlights where the real work needs to happen.
And that's why I think the book remains so vital. Leaders change, alliances shift, tactics evolve. But the deep-seated historical and psychological software Friedman identified, it's tragically still running the show in many ways. Understanding that demands empathy, it demands patience, and it demands realism from anyone looking at the region. It's not a quick fix.
A profound and unfortunately still incredibly relevant analysis.
Indeed.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.